Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amaduri, and we just got news. First quarter GDP, it's now down 4.8% for the first quarter here in the U.S. Pretty serious, pretty dramatic. I mean, and such a turn in the economy, so quick. It happened, I think the fastest bull market to bear market we've ever seen. And of course, things are now reflating with trillions of dollars that are getting thrown at the markets, both from the government side and from the Federal Reserve side. And to talk about all of this today and to get deep into precious metals and the mining stocks, we have Dave Kranzler of InvestmentResearchDynamics.com. He's a gold, silver, and mining economist, former Wall Street employee, and someone that, we've interviewed before, a returning guest, a favorite, and someone well-known in the gold and silver community. So it's a pleasure to have him on and to pick his brain. So Dave, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me.
Kenneth, thanks for having me on again. It's a pleasure. When you say we're going to get deep into precious metals, was I supposed to bring a shovel and pickaxe also?
Well, deep for me, my IQ isn't that high. So I'm sure whatever you give us will be greatly appreciated. So, Dave, unemployment is heading to depressionary levels. I mean, we're looking at what we're seeing right now. We saw the news come out on the GDP shrinking. Now, I kind of want to get your thoughts on this. Because it happened so fast and the stimulus checks coming out so quickly, unemployment checks, getting a bonus, giving people a bonus in many situations, I feel like the feeling of a depression is being delayed and, also being deflected to the coronavirus shutdown. So everyone's kind of in this, hey, let's hunker down and let's get back at it. But I don't feel like the feeling of a depression has hit the U.S. economy and the global economy yet.
God, I think it's hard to say because I think it kind of depends on kind of what your financial situation was prior to the virus crisis hitting, right? So, there are several surveys out over the last year that showed, just under 80% of all households had less than $400 in savings. And I think a lot of those households probably have a different perspective than if you're kind of in the top 10 or 20% of the income demographic. So, I'm guessing the media was probably instructed to dull it down, but last week and the week before, there was a preponderance of stories and pictures of mile to 2 mile long car lines at food banks. So I would say that if you're a lower middle class or middle class family, and you're in line in your car at a food bank, looking to get food for your kids, you haven't paid your rent or your mortgage this month or in March, etc. You're missing your credit card payments, your auto loan payments. I would say those people probably would say this must have been what it felt like during the depression.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. I did not mean to be desensitized or.
Oh, no. I get what you're saying. Yeah. I
mean, it's just so fast, with the immediate response and then the stock market coming back. It just hasn't, it almost doesn't feel like we've flushed through this yet. And, really the defaults on massive levels and, foreclosures, all these things that should happen in a recession or depression, it just hasn't yet. Everything's just happening in hyper speed at the moment. So, maybe talk about the flushing through of this, if you can.
Well, again, that's an interesting point. And I think when you're, everyone's been so conditioned over the last 30 years to look at what today looks like versus yesterday, or, hey, look at the stock market, it must something good must be going on out there if the stock market's going on like that. Well, the reason why you haven't read about foreclosures or a lot of personal bankruptcies yet, et cetera, is because essentially the entire country's been given kind of a de facto forbearance on making those kinds of payments. I know you can get your forbearance on your mortgage payment for up to a year. I don't know how they're going to handle the credit card defaults, you know, whether they're going to tell the credit card companies, look, don't circle the wagons, you know, and go after this guy for a while. Let's, you know, we'll take care of you. That's kind of what the Fed's doing. They're taking care of the banks with printed money so that the banks aren't in a position where they have to go in and seize assets, foreclose, force households to declare bankruptcy, that type of thing. But again, when you think about it, I mean, we've only been in this kind of shelter in place quarantine situation for what, about 6 weeks, maybe since mid-March. And it's going to take a lot longer for that, for the reality to emerge and what's going on underneath all the money that's being printed and the stimulus. I mean, the stimulus check, you know, great. Thanks, Mnuchin. You send me $1,200. Well, I don't even get the $1,200, but you know, you're a middle class family of four, you get $1,200. Okay, let's see. Well, my mortgage, my car payment, my credit card payment every month is more than $1,200. So I'm just gonna skip that and use this to buy food. You know, and defer waiting in line in the food bank for a couple weeks. So I guess my point is here is it's going to take several months before we really see how bad things really are. And I would argue that the price of oil, in addition to sort of the technical considerations that drove it negative, what's happened with the supply-demand situation in oil is a better reflection of what's going on underneath all the printed money that the central banks, especially the Fed, are throwing out there in the real economy. So the GDP number, for instance, today, they said was down, what, about 4.8 or whatever? I haven't had a chance to go through the numbers, but I can guarantee you that they put their best spin on those numbers before they released them. But the first quarter GDP only captures through the end of March. So, you know, if the virus, let's just say the virus crisis really kind of forced things to a standstill in mid to late March, you've had, you know, a couple quarters of non-crisis activity in this country. So what'll be even more interesting to see is second quarter GDP, which obviously we're not going to get for several months, but you know, it'll show that, yeah, the Fed can keep the banks afloat and push the market up with printed money, but it can't generate economic activity with printed money.
Dave, I don't always just, you know, in these interviews, analyze like a day-to-day move in the markets. But I think it's interesting what we're seeing in the stock market today. You know, stocks are up as we do, you know, this interview on 4/29/2020. Gold is down 0.5%, the spot price, and silver's up about 0.5%. And I almost am wondering, you know, with the spot price, precious metals, I mean, it seems like there's been more of like an easing. The volatility has been easing with stocks moving higher and, you know, precious metals starting to just kind of level out here. We know that we've seen shortages in terms of physical in when you try to buy it from bullion dealers, you know, premiums are really high. And, you know, I just kind of want to get your thoughts on where things are as stocks are moving higher. You know, they're easing the volatility. The sentiment is maybe easing a little bit for people. What's the current environment now at the end of April for precious metals as you see it in a general sense?
You know, the funny thing is the mainstream narrative is it wants to connect the price of the movement in gold to the stock market. And, you know, there is some correlation there or inverse correlation, but, you know, again, we need to clarify when you talk about the price of gold, you're not referring to the actual price of physical gold trades. What we're looking at. So today you see gold down, you know, well, I'm looking at the June future contracts down $10. That's the paper price of gold. There's not actually gold trading on the COMEX. And I mean, as your audience is well aware, there's extreme official intervention in the gold market, and it occurs in the paper gold market. And the reason why you're seeing such you're hearing about shortages in physical versus what is being reflected. You would think that, oh, well, the price of gold should be flying. Well, in a sense, it is flying. I mean, it was not too long ago, the price of gold was testing the 1200, the paper price of gold was testing the 1200 area. But, you know, very little physical gold is transacting at those levels or these levels. So honestly, as long as the Fed keeps printing money, and the federal government keeps issuing debt, the price of gold is going to go a lot higher. Now, since we're, you know, historically, for the last 20 years, every time we're in a week where there's an FOMC meeting, 90 to 95% of the time, the price of gold gets taken down ahead of that meeting. I mean, you know, the message is, hey, you know, we can't let gold go up, ahead of the Fed announcing more lenient monetary policy, because every dollar the price of gold rises detracts from the credibility of the U.S. dollar as a fiat currency. So I think I would not be surprised to see gold testing the 1900 area by the end of the summer, if not before. And at some point, you know, when you talk about the physical shortage, at some point, big wealthy entities, whether it's sovereign governments, central banks, wealthy families, et cetera, they're going to start saying, okay, enough of this game. We want delivery of the physical gold. Because those entities understand the wealth preservation versus the fiat currency devaluative effect of all the money printing that's going on.
Dave, I think this is a good time, especially with what we've seen in oil, to kind of address the difference between, you know, what's happening in oil and what's happening in precious metals. You know, when we saw that negative oil price to incentivize delivery, delivery had to happen. You know, they wanted it to happen. And, you know, what stands out as different to you as to how, you know, gold and silver contracts are traded and, you know, get delivered, don't get delivered? That makes this market a little different?
Well, I mean, first of all, oil is a depletable asset, right? So eventually, you know, over a long enough time frame, that excess oil supply is going to be used up. And all of a sudden, there's going to be plenty of storage available. And at that point in time, the price of oil should kind of reflect the supply demand characteristics, right? I mean, without oil, you can't run the economies at all. Gold is a different beast because in the West, most of the large players, they only care about the paper gold, the gold futures. Very little gold, very few of the entities that are long gold futures ever stand for delivery. Now, interestingly, the last couple delivery months, there's been a lot more entities standing for delivery. Like, you know, I think if, you know, buyers are saying, well, hey, you know, we can't take delivery over in London because they won't, you know, they won't deliver us our bars and they won't let us take them out of the vault. So look at all the inventory that the COMEX is showing. Let's go try and source our physical gold there. So the thing about gold is it's not a depletable resource. So, you know, other than for, you know, you got gold fillings or whatever, but people use gold for wealth preservation, right? As opposed for an economic, you know, they both have economic purposes, but, you know, like I said, oil is needed. It's demanded every day it gets consumed. Gold, you know, buyers can be patient and wait for their price or wait for a period of time when they think they'll actually be able to get delivery. So right now, what you're seeing is serious buyers who want to take delivery of large quantities, they're not going to go in and demand delivery and pay for it up front because they know that in all likelihood, they may not see that gold for quite some time. So why would you put up money for gold bars that are sitting in a vault over in London that you don't know whether those bars really exist? You don't know if you'll ever really be able to remove them and take them to your desired location of safekeeping. And so that's kind of what's going on. Right now, I would say that very, very little physical gold at the wholesale or at the large scale level is actually changing hands.
Yeah. And again, why, and maybe you could just reiterate it. Why is it like that compared to oil? You know, they just, people just trust it in where they're at. They're comfortable with it. You know, oil obviously needs to move. It takes up space, but you know, it, on the physical gold side, physical silver side, people are just comfortable, you know, seeing it as a digit. Is that the difference?
Well, again, I mean, you know, they serve different purposes. You know, if you own GLD, you don't own gold. You own a paper derivative of gold. And when you go to sell it, you know, you end up with dollars in your brokerage account or whatever currency your brokerage account is in. So you don't really own gold. You're indexing the price of gold, but you don't own gold. Gold is a much more scarce resource than oil, especially right now. Right now, you need oil every day to, you know, run your economies. So it's I don't know why gold and oil get thrown into the same basket of analysis, but they're completely different. One is a wealth preservation. One is real money. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I guess you could barter with barrels of oil, but you know. Would you rather barter with barrels of oil or take them to the refinery and refine it into a usable form so that you can heat your home or run your car or run your factory? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Gold is a precious metal. It's precious for a reason. It's scarce. There's not a lot of it left in the ground. And the people who own large quantities of it own it as because it's real money, and it's a hedge against the reckless policies of central banks and governments.
Absolutely. Dave, let's talk a little bit. Let me pull this right out, my notes here. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is the meltdown we saw in oil. Okay, I thought that was really interesting. And, it was a negative oil price that we saw. I feel like the breakdown in the gold price or the silver price, it's not going to be to the negative side. It's going to be to the upside in a big way. And I think that was a real connect the dots moment for me to see a breakdown in the markets, because conventionally that was just jaw dropping to watch what was going on, you know, on CNBC and Bloomberg, them talking about this negative $40 oil price. I mean, crazy, right? You know, but that's what the world we live in. And I think it's conspiracy for a lot of people to think that there's going to be a meltdown in the gold and silver price, but we saw it happen in oil. So, you know, talk about that a little more, you know, the breakdown of the gold and silver price in the futures market, maybe juxtaposed to oil. You know, I know I'm kind of harping on that and I apologize for that, but I just think it's so telling what we saw there and, believable for people to apply it to gold and silver now.
Yeah, that's, you know, again, it's just, they're different beasts. I know what you mean when I saw oil go down to 20 bucks, I thought it was kind of spooky. And I was like, how can the stock market be up, you know, 800 points when oil's going straight south? There's a message there that's lost on the stock market. And, you know, the primary reason for that is because the Fed has removed all price discovery aspects out of the mm-hmm. stock market. Now, what I think is interesting, as you point out, the more likely way for gold to break is up. And so the two markets really reflect mirror opposite conditions underlying the markets, right? So when you see the price of oil go across the screen, that's the futures price. And most people who are playing in oil futures, most entities, they're going to take delivery of the oil itself. They want it. They need it. And so the watching oil go straight down like that reflected not just a lot more supply than demand right now, but also the technical considerations of storage running out. So it got to the point where, you know, if you're a hedge fund and you're long an oil contract because you're speculating on the price, you know, all of a sudden you know, you're looking at a situation where if you hold it long enough, you're going to have to take delivery of the oil. Where are you going to put it? So you get to the point where you have to pay someone to take that liability off your hands. You see what I'm saying? Now, gold, on the other hand, and again, the official sources aren't going to come out and admit this or ever admit the truth about it, but there's a significant shortage of the supply of physical gold bars sitting in vaults in London that is far outweighed by the demand for entities who are looking to convert all this fiat money into those bars. So I think at some point we're going to see the mirror opposite of what that oil chart looked like in the gold market, where you're going to see all of a sudden, you know, the gold market goes bid without an offer until, you know, except for offers that are up here. So at some point, the spot price of gold that's set in London twice a day, the AM and PM fix, at some point, that spot price is going to get bid up to a point, you know, to figure out where existing holders of gold are willing to offer bars out. You see what I'm saying? So as opposed to, you know, looking at a chart that goes like that, like we saw with oil, I feel like we're going to see a chart that goes like that with gold. And again, I don't know what kind of time frame, but, you know, I can feel it in my bones. It's coming.
Yeah, and we know that these can be settled in cash.
You know, when you saw that smash in March in gold, that was a function of the paper market. Hedge funds were dumping everything, and the largest long side of COMEX contracts are hedge funds. So they were just dumping paper gold, and the entities that are short, the market makers, the banks, they're pulling their bids so that it goes lower so they can cover their shorts. But you saw the price of gold rebound very quickly, right? From March 13th to where it is now, I think we almost went below 1200 in mid-March, and now we're over 1700. So, you know, and we haven't seen that kind of bounce in the price of oil, because the supply-demand situation hasn't righted itself yet, and that's going to take a long time to work out.
Where did the demand come from in gold, would you say?
We can kind of track, because we can, you know, we know that over the last several years, China, India, and Russia have been importing thousands of tons. You know, it just, you know, almost for on in most years, if you just look at the amount of gold that India and China have imported combined on an annual basis, that's almost equivalent to the amount of gold that's produced in a year. So you got India and China soaking up most of the mine supply, and then add Russia to the equation, which, you know, has been building its gold reserves every month for several years. And then all of a sudden, over the last couple of years, you've had a lot more Eastern Hemisphere central banks, you know, jump into the, you know, we want to start building our gold reserves game. And so essentially you've had, you know, these entities over in the Eastern Hemisphere buying and taking delivery of more gold than is produced by mines. The excess supply comes from vaults in London or the COMEX, where they will lease out gold bars so that the entities that are short the contracts or short the forwards can make delivery. Because when China buys gold or imports gold, they don't want it sitting in a vault in London. They want to bring it over. They want to first shoot it through a refinery in Switzerland, and then move it into China, where it goes either to the Central Bank of China, the People's Bank of China, or it goes to the Shanghai Gold Exchange. So there's been several years where you've had a depletion of the supply of gold, and I think now we're possibly at the breaking point of that, and that's what I think is going to cause a huge upward movement in the spot price of gold at some point. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And you know what? What I want to follow up with is the mining stocks. You know, we've seen the GDX move higher and hit some technical levels that a lot of people are pointing towards, which I think is interesting. You know, gold at $1,700, we're seeing the GDX hit levels that we saw when gold was, what, 1380 in 2016. So, you know, just on like a a comparative basis, you know, where we saw gold at 1380 in the GDX compared to where gold is now in the GDX, you know, you people have to ask some questions as to the value, the underlying value of the miners. And, you know, there's days like today where we're seeing, you know, like silver move up a little. And, you know, a lot of the silver miners moving up by 3 and 4 and 5 times the spot price percentage that we're seeing. And I think that's telling something to us that these miners want to move. There's a lot of money on the sidelines waiting to pour into them. And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on this. What are you sensing in the mining sector?
I agree. I mean, ever since the peak, the top of the market in 2011, and we had a 4.5-5 year bear market in the sector, it's taken a long time for the mining stocks to respond to the movement in the price of gold that we've seen. And for me, it just speaks to the fact that the miners as a whole are historically cheap in relation to the price of gold and silver right now. And what compounds that value there is the cost of energy is 50% of the cost of mining, right? So when you have oil go from 60 down to 20, and a lot of these mines are starting to operate again and pump out gold and silver, the operating margin and cash flow margins of the producing miners are going to be off the charts. And as they generate just, I mean, some of these gold mining companies and silver mining companies, they're going to be like, you know, it's going to be like they have their own printing press for cash because they're going to be making so much money selling gold over 1700, and their cost structure has been lowered considerably because of the cheap cost of energy.
I wonder if a lot of these miners were the ones taking the delivery of this negative oil futures price. That would have been a way to capitalize if they had a way to deal with it, of course.
I mean, if they had a place to store it, you know, it would have been smart to do that. I would hope at least that these large producing mining companies are locking in through the futures market, locking in the current price of oil, because it's not going to get much cheaper if it gets cheaper at all. So, I mean, this is a fantastic opportunity for mining companies to lock in a low cost of oil or low cost of energy, you know, across the board for a long time. And I guess, you know, part of the thing is when you say you feel like the miners are getting ready to take off again, because the miners have been kind of lethargic relative to the price of gold and silver, I think the market was seeing that as a message of, oh, well, you know, it's at some point the price of gold and silver is going a lot lower or the miners would be responding. Well, I think it's going to be just the opposite. At some point, the general market is going to see that gold and silver is here to stay at this level and probably going a lot higher. And we're going to start to see a lot of money that's chasing these insanely overvalued tech stocks and unicorn type stocks. A lot of that money is going to pull out and move into the mining stocks. And we haven't not even close to seeing that phase yet. I mean, back in 2010, 2011, a lot of the big mutual fund complexes started moving their general investment funds into the mining stocks. And we have that ahead of us to look forward to. Now, you know, as you pointed out earlier, the sector is volatile. Gold and silver are volatile. To the extent that they're manipulated, it makes them even more volatile. And so the mining stocks are going to be volatile as well. But you can see what happens when silver, you know, starts to have a pulse again, the mining stocks fly. And that's because, you know, there's the people that are watching this market understand, you know, every time the price of silver goes higher, these silver miners become that much more valuable.
Dave, to what extent are these miners exposed to a downturn in the overall market? I mean, we're seeing stocks up and, you know, some of these silver miners are up. So, you know, what caution or what are your thoughts on just a risk if we do see another smashdown of trillions of dollars lost in overall equities? What would you expect to happen in the miners?
That's a great question. And I get that question all the time from subscribers. And I mean, there's just no way to know. I mean, we saw the miners get hammered when the general stock market was getting hammered in March. And the miners actually bottomed out ahead of the general stock market and started moving, you know, inexorably higher. I mean, you know, what gets lost in the mainstream financial media, and you'll never see this on CNBC or Bloomberg or Fox Business. I mean, the GDX has nearly doubled since the middle of March. I mean, if the S&P doubled from the time that it hit a bottom in March till now, I mean, they'd be doing cartwheels on CNBC. So, I think if you, even though they've run up a lot right now, if you invest in the mining stocks a year from now, you're going to look back and say, I wish I had moved my whole portfolio into mining stocks.
Isn't that the nature of bull markets? You know, yep. And that's the part of the problem too, because, you know, they give you that confidence and then people put all their money in next year when they are up, and then they don't end up making anything if they don't play their cards right.
Right. You know, just to sort of circle back to answer your question fully, when the market, there is going to be another like shocking sell-off in the stock market. I don't know when, no one knows when. It's going to be coming. At some point, the stock market's going to have to reflect the underlying realities. And you could see the mining stocks sell off in correlation for a short period of time. But a downturn like that is like, it's like throwing napalm into the precious metal sector, because we see what the Fed does every time the stock market has a 10% drawdown. They crank up the printing press again. And I mean, that's the perfect environment for gold, silver, and mining stocks, is the Fed printing money. And after the next stock market downturn, I'm sure the Fed will crank up the printing press again. I mean, it took its balance sheet from 3.7 trillion up to, I didn't even look at, well, I guess the next balance sheet comes out tomorrow or is released tomorrow, to, you know, let's call it 6.5 trillion, right? So, and that was as a result of the last downturn in the stock market. Well, on the next downturn, we're, you know, by the same percentage move, we could see the Fed's balance sheet, you know, start to approach 10 trillion, you know, and we see that gold's going over 2000 in a nanosecond.
Couldn't agree more. Dave, kind of a closing question here, you know, in terms of how you see this, and you mentioned something very interesting. When the stock market goes down 10%, the Fed throws trillions of dollars at the market. So to that extent, would you expect to see the stock market go to 15, call it whatever a low number would be, Dow Jones 15,000, 10,000? Or is it more likely that when we do have a pullback, they inflate it to where it is now and beyond? I mean, go back to 30,000 Dow Jones, 35,000, because of that cash that's getting injected into the system while, you know, stocks go up, gold goes up, and they just keep hyperinflating our way out of this. Is that more likely than a $10,000 or 10,000 point Dow Jones?
That's a great question. And I mean, I look to what happened in Weimar Germany when the, I guess it was called the Reichsbank back then, when in the last, I don't know, 18 months or so before the mark collapsed. I mean, essentially the central bank went Weimar with the money supply, and it drove the stock market. I forget the level, like, I, you know, just call it the index at the time, it drove that stock market up to a billion. All right. But it also drove the price of gold up to a, you know, an equivalent level, right? So that could be the more likely scenario that we see. I don't see the Fed or the government, if they can prevent it, I don't see them letting the stock market, you know, crash down to a level where it should crash to. Now, that's not to say we're not going to see more downside. It's probably going to take that type of downside in order to trigger what would be considered Weimar scale printing from our central bank. But it's going to get to a point where there's going to be so many people out of work, so many people defaulting on their credit card, auto loans, mortgages, personal loans, etc., that in order for the Fed to prevent the collapse of the banks, it's going to have to print just trillions and trillions and trillions. And let's be clear about one thing. The Fed's mission isn't price stability and full employment. The Fed's mission is to keep the banks from collapsing. And that's the only thing the Fed cares about.
You know, just if I step back and just look what we saw happen over the last couple months, it really goes to show why cash is so volatile. And, you know, arguably, you do want to own stocks because, you know, they're going to hyperinflate the crap out of them. And you're better off owning stocks than you are cash because, at least in nominal terms, you'll have more value in the stock market than you would cash. And I know that's nuanced and there's a lot to unpack by me just throwing that out there. But to the extent that the thesis is they're going to print the crap out of the dollar to defend this, arguably the stock market is going a lot higher than where it is now. I mean, we see these pullbacks, but then, you know, but how do you know how low it goes? You don't, you know?
See, that's the problem that the public doesn't understand. And that's why the central bank can get away with printing money like this is that, yeah, they can inflate the stock market. They can inflate the money supply and inflate the stock market, but you know, no one thinks about the purchasing power of those dollars, mm-hmm. right? And if the economy is operating at a very low level, at a level that doesn't reflect the kind of money that's being printed, you're going to have inflation in the prices of the goods that people need every day. And we saw that happen in Weimar Germany. I mean, the average German didn't give a crap about the stock market going where it was going. They needed to be able to put food on the table. And when you inflate the money supply like that, one of the hidden effect of that is it decreases the purchasing power of your dollar. And that's why, I mean, there's anecdotal stories of, you know, people, you know, back in Germany back then, when they would go out to a restaurant for dinner, they would also take the wine bottle with them because the bottle itself was worth more than the marks that would be used to buy that bottle. So, and we'll start seeing that now. I mean, the toilet paper example is kind of extreme, but that illustrates, you know, the kind of value that people place on a utilitarian good in a situation like this versus dollars. I mean, and we're going to start seeing that with a lot more products like meat, you know, basic goods that people need to function every day. And most of these people don't care about what the stock market's doing because they're not exposed to the stock market. And that's why, as you say, well, I've got a pile of cash. Do I want to put it in the stock market so that it, you know, indexes the devaluation of the dollar with the inflating stock market? Or do I want to put it in gold and silver? Because gold and silver are going to go up an even greater percentage than the stock market does. And the problem is at some point, the Fed's going to destroy the dollar, as we saw in Weimar, Germany. You know, the mark, there was, and I can't remember the specific date, it's like November 14th, 1923 or something. Overnight, the German government had to completely devalue the mark. They've basically canceled it and created a new mark. And you might have had a billion marks in the bank, but the day after the devaluation, you had one mark in the bank. But you still, if you had gold, you still had gold that was worth its level the day before the mark was devalued or canceled. Absolutely. And so that's, I mean, that sounds like it's extreme, but that's what we could ultimately see happen in this country with what the Fed's doing.
I think a $10 trillion balance sheet on the Fed is extreme. You know, when you consider where we were,
yes,
how quickly this is all happening. I think what we saw in the oil markets was very telling. I think what we saw with the world shutting down, you know, billions of people locked in their homes, I think that's extreme. I think, you know, what you're talking about is not conspiracy, you know, anymore. This is something that people can connect the dots when they say, I see this happening. So, Dave, I really want to appreciate you for coming on the show and sharing your thoughts. If people want to learn more about you, Investment Research Dynamics, please let them know where they can go and what they can expect to find.
Sure. Thanks for having me on again, Kenneth. I mean, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. You seem to really understand what's going on out there as well as anyone. But my website is Investment Research Dynamics, and I post, you know, blog posts when I need some couch time, some free couch time, to get frustrations off my chest about the system. And I also have links to my mining stock journal, which is a twice a month, mainly focus on junior mining stocks in there. And I also have the short sellers journal. And so there's links at the top of my blog to both those where you can learn more about those.
And we'll have the links in the description area. Dave, thank you so much for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
Thank you.